and welcome to America Trends, giving a greeting to our audience on the U to America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. Thank you all for being here. And you look lovely today. Did you know? It's National Compliment Day. Yes, you rock. A National Compliment Day, it's an unofficial holiday that falls annually on January 24th. The purpose, to say something nice to your friends, family, coworkers, and probably anybody, I'm sure. Way to go. Good job. Well done. Also, by the way, while we're talking about it, National Peanut Butter Day, so do what you want with that. And then Beer Can Appreciation Day. Go wild. Be creative and let us know, right? What else is trending? Don't even look. It's more fighting. People are still arguing online over the Covington Catholic kids and that Nathan Phillips who got in their faces. And all the celebrity and politicians who sort of targeted the teenagers and even doxed them. Doxing, you may know, means giving out private info like home addresses, phone numbers, etc. Alyssa Milano saying the red MAGA hat is the new white hood. For her part, a journalist was fired after calling the Covington teens and parents to be killed. He wasn't the only one. Just so much violence called for you. It's just unbelievable times. Other ugly arguments online. New York has just allowed Governor Cuomo to sign into law, to sign into effect abortions up to 9 months, up until the moment of birth. Lawmakers there cheered this week after the state Senate removed restrictions on late-term abortions. Twitter's talking about it. Here's a listen to this, too.
I support this act. It's crucial that we protect a woman's right to choose, particularly at this moment in history where women's rights are under attack.
But Cardinal Dolan today called the new law radical.
It's so important for us to insist that the protection of the baby in the womb is a civil rights issue. It's not a Catholic issue. It's not a religious issue. It is a civil rights issue.
It was 46 years ago this week, by the way, that Roe v. Wade was made into the law of the land. Michael Hart of Heart of America will be in with us later to talk about all the political headlines of the day here on America Trends. Did you know a new Sopranos prequel is in the works? Everybody's excited about this. Creator David Chase has found his lead. Michael Gandolfini will portray a younger version of Tony Soprano, originally played by his late father, James Gandolfini. As Deadline Hollywood reports, his screen presence, mastery of Tony's mannerisms, coupled with his resemblance to its father, next still, made him a standout choice for the role. The prequel, a film, is called The Many Saints of Newark. The younger Gandolfini is now starring in HBO's drama series, The Deuce. Ahead, observationalist Bill Goldstein will be in with us, and model and violinist Molly Fletcher. Quite a young lady. She's got an upcoming album, and she's inspiring kids to follow their dreams, musical and otherwise. Take a listen.
Thank you.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. Glad you are with us for the hour. Got some great guests coming up, including right now, we are bringing back our resident observationalist, taking you to New York to meet with Bill Goldstein. He is a lawyer, sports marketing pioneer, observationalist, and look, this is a new title, a content machine. I like that. He's sort of our own Andy Rooney, and we've got a few topics, so grab a beverage. That's what we do. We sit down with Bill, and we hear about his thoughts of the day. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Couldn't be better, Amy. Couldn't be better. How are you?
Good to hear from you. Some of the topics we're talking about tonight, the value of training and what you borrowed from the SEAL model in your own business, and you were quite successful. New York City's shame, and this has to do with its ports of entry, sedans versus SUVs, and your daughter explaining why she and so many care for animals. Now, this is pretty universal. They're cuddly, they're lovely. What's not to love about animals? So what struck you that you wanted to
The only point that I was sort of shocked by, not shocked, but educated by, I should say, is that my daughter, Elizabeth, and I think many, many others, actually care more about animals than she does about people. And that doesn't mean she doesn't care about people, but her real deep concerns are to protect animals. And I remember, and of course the whole world of animals, I'm told that 70% of American households have animals in them, that many consider them not animals really at all, but sort of fur babies, and the growing business that's associated with animals and dogs. I invested in a company called Fresh Pet, which produces great dog food and cat food and so on, and it's gone crazy. And at bottom here is my daughter's a point of view, which you and others may really share, is when I asked her about this, she looked at me cross-eyed and she said, well, what's the mystery, Dad? Animals have nobody to speak up for them.
Yeah.
We
really are their caretakers. And when you have someone depending on you, especially if you don't have kids and you're their world, they're part of your world. But for my dogs at home, we are their world, the people who show up in the house every day. And Bill, this is so interesting too. In 1 year's time, like last year, we spent over $60 billion on our pets. Big money.
Yeah,
so you're investing well.
It's a huge business. And when she told me the reason at bottom, because they can't speak up for themselves, well, of course, it makes a lot of sense. So, and she's very involved with dog training and horses and all manner of things. And there's more charities out on the East End of Long Island and the Hamptons in the summertime, more charitable events for animals than for people typically. So it's just sort of edifying for me to understand, the people who really carry these relationships, why, and this is why, because they're their voice, much as you said, you're their world and all the rest. So anyway,
they're so innocent and they're usually pretty cute. Do you have pets, Bill?
Yeah, we have a little Havanese dog that we've had for a while. And everybody loves Kodak, we call him. We bought him. Of course, my daughter now would never buy a pet from where we bought this pet from. But at the time, we bought him, and they had him in the window, and they had named him Kodak because everybody was coming in trying to have their picture taken with this dog.
That's funny.
So we just kept the name, yeah. So.
Yeah, if you have room in your heart and your home, go check out a rescue. Find a dog or a cat or bird. They They have everything. You can go get a new little bunny rabbit. That's a cute one right there. So we want to see Kodak one of these days, Bill. Can you make an appearance?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to get him all smart.
Usually we have some of our guests, their dogs barge in during the interview.
So yeah, that could happen too. That could happen too.
He must be well trained. Yeah. You're also talking tonight about the value of training, and you borrow some of the tenets of our own Navy SEALs, is that right?
Yeah, and one of their fundamental concepts, which I endorse, is that people cannot be relied upon to rise to the occasion. We like to think that we will do that, and of course some people do. But if you're running a business, or the military, even more so, you cannot rely on that. It's simply a fallacy that people are going to rise to the occasion. They're going to rise to what? They're going to rise to the level of their training. That's what they can be relied upon. And that's why the SEAL training is so rigorous, because they're trying to preempt any circumstance that you could come upon that you will have indeed been trained for. And that's how, you know, I was in the event business. We put on live events all over the world. Very vulnerable to any problem that could intervene. And so we overtrained. If I needed five people at an event, I'd send six.
What do you mean, like security or just all together?
Yeah, no, we weren't security. If it was our event, why, everybody on the premises would be working for us. Mm-hmm. But if it was your golf event or somebody, a symphony orchestra that a client of mine had a participation in, we'd send people to make sure that what was supposed to happen happened, and we'd always send an extra person, and that person was a target for training. So their directions that they would be given would be faulty, purposefully faulty.
Oh boy!
When they would get to the box office, there'd be no ticket for them. The phone numbers that they were given were incorrect. Their flights were not booked properly. Everything that we could do to disrupt their trip, we did.
Jeez, that is some on-the-job training. That's so interesting because you can really tell I'm going to say it, men from the boys, some people would say an archaic phrase, but I'm going to employ it. If they become a liability or if they can help you get out of a jam, there's a big difference in what kind of people you want to work for you. Hey, I love this topic, and we've got more. I'm going to put a pin in it and hold you over. Is that okay, Bill?
I'm here for you.
Okay, stay tuned. We are with Bill Goldstein on America Trends, our resident observationalist, Michael Hart, ahead with political headlines of the day as well.
I know what I needed, and I don't want to waste more time. I'm in a New York State.
Yeah, when you are trying to get a business, organization, or anything off the ground, just manning your household, you could do worse than to employ some of the tenets used by our United States Navy SEALs and military. We're rejoined by Mr. Bill Goldstein, coming to us from New York City. He is our lawyer, sports marketing pioneer, our resident observationalist, our own Andy Rooney. Bill, you were talking about the value of training and what you've borrowed from the SEAL model in your own business. It makes me think of about 4 or 5 years ago, this thing went viral, this talk that an Admiral McRaven did at the University of Texas at Austin. It started out by saying, you know what, when you get up, make your bed. And this, you look it up, just put Navy SEALs make your bed in Google, and it's a great talk. And you've used it for your own needs with your business, which was very successful. What were you talking about?
Well, I was just saying how rigorous we train people, indeed put them in, well, not in harm's way, but we made every disruption we could when we knew that we didn't need them on site. So we'd over-resource an event and have one or two extra people who were assigned there, and those people, you know, would have a difficult time. But it was a learning experience for them, and we would never put anybody in charge of an event until they'd come through several such experiences and seen how they could improvise. For example, we had one fellow who we gave poor directions to. He was doing a golf event, We always tell people to allow, you know, time for mistakes and all the rest. So there's really no excuse even for bad directions for being late. But he was running a little late, or fearful that he would be. And he pulls into a gas station to ask for directions. And he sees in the gas station a taxi driver in an empty cab. And he has a better idea. He goes up to the cab driver and he says, "Do you know where this country club is?" Guy says, "Yeah." He says, "Fine, throw your meter," gets back in his car and follows the cab driver. Now, that was a far better idea than going inside and asking somebody for directions, who might not have known where the country club was and might have given him good or bad directions. This guy knew exactly where it was. It was good thinking. What we wanted was resilient thinkers. We wanted people who could contend with problems, were resilient, and then could think their way out of it. Here's a guy who was running late, he had bad directions, and he thought his way out of it based on circumstances. And those were the kinds of people we wanted, and I expect those are the people that the SEALs people want as well.
Bill, that's a good hire. I expect many people could say that there are two types of people, those who are, they might be a victim by that. Well, I had bad directions, it's not my fault. And then the other one that says, no, I'm going to work this out. I'm going to not only am I going to ask for directions, I'm going to actually get this. I'm going to, because time is of the essence. I'm going to have this cab lead me there. That's pretty good. Yeah. On the whole, how did people do? Were you sort of impressed by the success of your candidates, or were there any big letdowns?
Well, I mean, you know, it was mixed. It was mixed. Mm-hmm. And you know, live events put a unique kind of pressure on people. And you're exposed because, you know, you can tell how successful you are by how many people are in the hall. There are other measures as well, of course, but it takes a special kind of insides to be able to contend with what's going on alive. Much as, you know, as a TV show or broadcast. Also, I mean, it's not to say that an event promoter has a unique set of experiences, but our experiences were pretty good, you know, and we would repeat them. Somebody might get three or four such sessions. We'd never tell them when they were coming. But we had put on a lot of events, and therefore the obstacles that we created, we knew were possible, and we ran people through them. And bottom line here, however, is people rise to the level of their training. That's the point. Not, oh, they'll figure it out or they'll react positively to certain. No. They rely on training. That's what you can rely on. That's the only thing you can rely on.
Pretty good training. BillGoldstein.com is where you can find more on Bill. Follow him on social media. He does great videos, often very active, and they're funny and they're edifying, and we just love talking to him and hearing from him. Also talking tonight about what you call New York's shame, their ports of entry, all three airports and Penn Station.
Well, you know, I'm a Bostonian, but I've been in New York for over 40 years, and it suits me, and I'm a real New York chauvinist. But, you gotta speak the truth, yeah?
Yeah.
And the all three airports, you know, the J.D. Power did a survey not long ago rating the 80 biggest U.S. airports. JFK was 78, Newark was 79, and LaGuardia was 80. So all three airports are terrible. They're overcrowded. There's no parking. They're hard to get to. The food is lousy. They're a wreck. And now they're all construction sites because they're being redone, you know, and maybe a decade down the road and billions, they might be better. But in the meantime, they're a disaster. And the only thing that's worse is Penn Station. And Penn Station is the busiest train station in the country by a margin. And it is awful. And I know this intimately because I had for many years offices in Madison Square Garden, which squats right on top of Penn Station, which means there's no natural light in Penn Station because of that. And it merges Amtrak and Long Island Railroad and New Jersey Transit all have this as their hub. Each section is different. The signage is different. The corridors are different. The lighting is different. There's no air conditioning in most of it. It's an abomination, truly. It's the biggest shame in New York City. And worse still, it was when it was built in 1910, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
But in the 50s, they knocked it down when they built the garden, or the 60s, and they replaced it with this thing. And it's just the worst.
What's your solution?
Well, I mean, what's the solution? I mean, more money, you know, and more speed, I mean, which is more money. You cannot have, this is the busiest city in the country, arguably the densest place in the world. You cannot have this. I mean, New Yorkers are arrogant in terms of what they expect when they travel, and they have, you know, sometimes our patients could be better. Because we're used to efficiency, and New York is efficient. You go to a restaurant in New York, and you're not going to wait long for the server to show up, you know, or for the food to show up. And there's 100 other examples I could give you. Well, the airports and Penn Station cannot be exempt from that. They're an embarrassment to us, and it's just unforgivable, truly unforgivable, that they exist in the condition that they exist now. And as we're speaking, thousands of people are being abused by these facilities.
Abused.
Because we have, you know, we just haven't put the money and the resource against them. Nope. And it's always been patchwork stuff and a little construction over here and a little construction over there.
We got to knock this next one out, Bill, in 30 seconds, sedans versus SUVs.
Well, you know, I wonder how anybody sells a regular sedan anymore. I just lost my earpiece here. I don't know how, because they're simply too small. You know, about 50% of the car market now are SUVs. And you can't see if you're driving in a sedan. I don't care if it's a Lamborghini. You know, you just can't see over the cars in front of you. When I drive, I hunt for a sedan.
And just let him keep talking to break, but we love our Bill. The environmentalists are going to get you, Bill. I can't wait till next time. BillGoldstein.com. The violinist there, Molly Fletcher, is with us tonight. She is a model and a violinist based in New York. She's talking to us tonight about following her dreams, music education. You know, a lot of people would love to go into music.
Yes.
But you really have to say hi to Molly. Yeah, in case you didn't notice, she's a model too. and that was, what were we just seeing right there?
So that was the live release album for Clean Bandit in Kyoto this last November. So they released their new album, What is Love? And we did a live show in Japan that was live streamed around the world. So it was really amazing.
Holy cow, and you're part of that group?
I play with them on tours and stuff like that, yeah.
So. And then the album you have coming out, is that your own album?
Yes, so this year I'm coming out with my own, my first solo album, which is classical violin with looping pedals. So it's kind of got that electronic element with the classical.
It really blends what we love about the classical violin and now.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, it's interesting because you have all these ways to mix up mediums. And the violin is something that is makes a lot of sound with just wood and horsehair, you know. And
it's pretty remarkable if you think about the basics of it, right?
Yes, and so to pair that with technology is very exciting.
And to pair it with your talent, because the wood itself isn't just going to make itself play. So that is really cool. Now, let's go back a little bit. I want to ask you, when did you know I love music? I mean, do you realize you love it first, and then at some point you realize there's talent, maybe I can go this route?
Yeah, I think it's been something that I've wanted to do my whole life. When I first, my brother's a cellist, and when he was taking lessons, he's 4 years older, so when I was a little girl, I would run out of the cello lessons and go find the violin and want to watch, but I've always wanted to perform. I've put on shows for my dolls, my parents, my friends since I was very little. So it was just always something that I wanted to go after.
You were enchanted with it right away because you watched your brother.
Yes, oh, yes. Man. So that and my family is musical, so it was always kind of
say,
around.
Sometimes that really runs in the blood and in the household.
Yes, absolutely.
And a lot of people love music, but then they realize, or maybe they realize that they really don't have a
yeah, so there is that.
But you really, when did you realize, I think I can do this and not, it's not just a dream, but I can make it a reality and a livelihood?
I think when I was in school, in middle school, high school, it was just always something that I was doing competitions and lessons, and I got a scholarship to New York University and wanted to move to New York right away.
Where are you from?
Dallas.
Oh,
yes.
Dallas, cool.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's all so cool. And I know you are also a big promoter of the arts and education.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very, very important because not only can you make a livelihood out of music, but the skills that you learn as a child about discipline and practice and just problem solving is something that I think you learn through music lessons. And I was able to teach, I haven't been able to teach as much right now, but I taught in middle school for several years, mixed 6th, 7th, and 8th graders in Brooklyn. So it was it was a very, very wonderful experience.
That had to be so rewarding.
It was. I was not just a music teacher, but I was also like a mentor to some of these kids.
Of course.
And it was fantastic.
They probably love watching you now, watching your star rise.
Yeah, we're still kind of friends on Instagram. So. Yeah.
All that stuff keeps us together. It's
yes,
so good.
It does.
Wow. So, and then you also, this it's a whole thing about following your dreams musically, and also you're a model.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you do all this in New York City, and we saw you, some of the video earlier in the show, you were actually playing during Fashion Week. Is that you?
Yeah, so I was on Project Runway.
Never stops. We need a whole show with you.
Yeah, so I did 5 seasons of Project Runway.
5?
All-Stars, Juniors, as well as the regular season. And so I've had these moments where I get to blend fashion and music, which is fantastic, of performing on the runway for Fashion Week and just being an entertainment lady, I don't know.
No, it's really cool though to meld everything. So Project Runway, how did you land that gig? How did you land everything, by the way?
Besides
having talent, was it fun to wear? What was it like? Let me ask you that first. Was it fun to wear all that stuff and sort of be in the middle of everything?
So that actual red garment was made out of sombreros.
Oh,
and the sombreros were cutting my armpits. And we had to put coverings on it because they were literally bleeding. But it was fantastic. It was amazing. It's Project Runway is very intense, filming day in, day out for the entire summer. But it was amazing. Yeah.
Pretty good gig.
Yeah.
So what do you have coming up next? I know you've got this album. Tell me about your album.
Yes. So the album that's coming out is called Reverie. It's very, I think of it kind of as music to think about your life too, because I, a lot of music now is you listen to 30 seconds, if that, and then you move on to the next thing. And I wanted to bring people back to sitting down and really listening to something and
having a moment.
A moment and getting through whatever you need to get through in your mind. Cause I think we all need to like sometimes take a moment and think and not just react.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's so true in this bustling world.
Yes, yes.
Huh.
So I have that coming up. I'm doing a bunch of performances. I have a performance back in New York when I get back. Just hustling.
That's so hustling. Cool. And this is a little bit more that's Fashion Week
from
February
of 2018.
Yeah, so this
was Fashion Week for, Greg Lorenz, and all of that was made out of Army military materials.
Nice.
So it was all repurposed, and the styling was to look like we were in the desert.
Oh, it looks really cool. I'll bet it was such a treat
yes.
to have you there among the look, you're modeling and playing.
Yes, yes.
And standing on your head and chewing gum.
Yeah, and then here comes the dramatic walk that goes.
Oh, gosh, that is so cool. So when is the album out?
I don't have a specific date yet.
Okay, we'll keep
but
us posted.
I will. It's coming, and I can't wait to get it out there.
I know. What kind of, what was it like touring in Asia too? I want to ask you that because that's just so interesting.
Yeah, so that was my first time in Asia actually. And when you're on tour, it is just, it is intense. Not only did I have a 12-hour time change jet lag, but I landed, went straight to the hotel, got up, did sound check in the first performance, right away getting right in there. So it's all about, you know, all those hours in the practice room, all of that preparation to deliver and go out on stage in front of 5,000 people and put on a show. So
that show was amazing. So you had to bring it, and you did, and they all did. What was the name of the group again?
Clean Bandit.
So we're going to see a little bit as we... Okay. So tell me, how did this group get together? How did you guys all find each other?
So the three of them, Grace and Jack and Luke, reached out to me to come and be on the violinist for the string tour. And they are just an amazing group based in the UK. Do a dance and electronic music, but since she's a cellist, she also likes to incorporate the classical, which I was very drawn to that, of that blend of classical and electronic music. So it was.
That is so.
It was really cool.
Yes. That could blow up. I want to get that out. Your album that's coming out and them. That's so cool. Well, thank you for sharing everything.
Yes, thank you.
I
will. I will. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how can we follow you? I'm sure you're on Instagram.
Yes, I'm on Instagram, Moll Fizzle, or Molly Fletcher, but Moll Fizzle.
Can you spell Moll Fizzle?
MOLFIZZLE.
Okay, I think we're out of time.
Yes.
Molly Fletcher, thanks so much.
Thank you.
With America Trends. Glad to have you along. People watching on the U2 America TV network and listening on Biz Talk Radio. Glad to have you all. Talking about some of the political headlines of the day with Michael Hart of The Michael Hart Show. He talks about all this and more on his show, and he has people call in, so he really gets to the heart of what people think across America. And Michael, it's so nice to see you back.
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. It's a joy.
Boy, it has been just a crazy week. Over the weekend, I remember watching Twitter and seeing all this stuff about the MAGA hat kids, Covington Catholic, and Nathan Phillips, is that his name, the Native American man?
Right.
Just going on. And then celebrities like Alyssa Milano. The red MAGA hat is a new white hood. So much inciting and so much of people jumping to conclusions when they had little evidence. And it's so sad. It's pretty devastating. But people are wishing these kids death.
Yeah, it's pretty insane all the way around. And, you know, I'm coming to you live from Alabama. And if anybody knows anything about racial tension, it's us in the Deep South. And when you begin to take the red MAGA hat and make a comparison between that and a KKK hood, that is reprehensible on every single level. Because, you know, there's a lot of people, particularly here in Alabama, I'm in Birmingham, where, you know, the four little girls were killed at the KKK in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing back in the 60s. Oh. And so you have these accusations that these things have a similarity to the KKK, and I find that disgusting, quite frankly.
It's disgusting and sad, and you wonder how it all can happen. People said, where were the chaperones? I guess the kids, when they were leaving that march, they always stand there and wait for their buses, and I that's what they were doing. And people said, well, where were the chaperones? Well, they were around, but like, what do you do? Who expects a group of adults to come in and start aggressing toward teenagers who listen, I'm going to say, I haven't watched the whole video. But I also didn't jump to conclusions either way. But I really don't think anybody should be getting in people's faces.
Well, of course not. And personally, I have chaperoned field trips to D.C. before. And you're right. You have these groups. You send the kids off on their way. They go over to Lincoln Memorial. Everything in the mall in D.C. is pretty much compartmentalized as long as you stay in the mall area near the reflecting pond. So these kids roam around in the groups. They have their tour guides or their docents. And a lot of times the chaperones are going to make themselves pretty much scarce to allow them to have the whole D.C. experience. But, you know, the narrative, and for me, the real issue became the way the media responded to it, and the fact that we get this one soundbite, we get this one piece of video, and all of a sudden we have got this major confluence of a lack of facts and all these fallacies related to these kids. And if you see the kid in the interview he did on Today's Show the other day, you know, he looks, if you reflect back, almost terrified for what's going on. He doesn't know how to process this situation. What is he, 15, 16 years old? And all of a sudden he's got this tormented Indian in his face?
And now facing the national media and celebrities calling for his death, and they're being doxxed. So it's disgusting all around. And this man, Nathan Phillips, everyone said, this poor native elder, this Vietnam veteran, and he was in the service during the Vietnam era. He was a refrigerator technician, never went to Nam. Apparently, right. the reports do say he was AWOL at least 3 times. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we love to virtue signal by raising people up and tearing others down. And the ones we tear down, the mainstream media, not me, are usually people wearing MAGA hats, and it's just disgusting. So, I don't know. What are your callers saying?
Well, they're obviously pretty upset with it, but I've been doing this for the better part of 11 years now. And so, you know, my callers pretty much come down from the same basic point of view where, you know, we might have Donald Trump, we might support some of his policies and his initiatives, but at the end of the day, they're just disgusted with everything from the left. And I lecture frequently on the media, the mainstream media, the new moral media, if you will. And, you know, you've mentioned my book so many times, and I'm so appreciative of that. But the book is all about a lot of the stories is the historical facts of this nation that were just perpetrated by the media or disseminated by the media that are just incorrect. And so you have so many people in this country that are getting the false narrative, the wrong narrative. But isn't it interesting to note the comments that were made by Joy Behar, of all people, where even she comes out and basically admits that the media is in some kind of frenzy and they want to take Donald Trump down because they have this wealth of circumstantial information and all this evidence and Mueller and Cohen and all these people that are going to bring him down. And we can, it's all wishful thinking. We can only hope. She more or less telegraphed exactly what they feel on the left. The ends, to go all Alinsky on you, does in fact justify the means in their viewpoint. So they will position this any way they possibly can to make it into a negative.
Well, Joy Behar said out loud, the reason we jump to conclusions is because we want Trump out of office.
It's absolutely,
it's appalling. And, you know, I want to write a book on the fake media. And I've got one in the works, but it'll never be done because there's nowhere to start and there's nowhere to finish. It's all too much. It's every single day. So there's just too much material to even get to. But speaking of your book, yeah, Joy Behar, Dr. Joy Behar, sounding off on all things political and people getting their news from The View. Don't. But this State of the Union, who knew that Nancy Pelosi could say, no, we're disinviting you? That was a civics lesson for me. I didn't know that, but you probably knew it because you do all this unknown history stuff. And this year will be a whole new chapter in your book or a whole new book.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny that you bring that up because I said the same thing this morning because I've been working on Unknown America, too, for about as long as number one. And every single day, there's something I feel compelled to put into the book because this is a historical move on the part of the speaker. Now, you know, in reality, previous presidents, some have, you know, not given a State of the Union address. It's not uncommon to avoid one. Even Trump did it in your inaugural year. And I think it was 1945, FDR actually wrote his out, sent it to the Senate, and had them read it on the floor. You know, a couple of other presidents had refused to give them all the way around. Now, it's a constitutional responsibility, but never have you seen in the history of this country the Speaker of the House take this position against a sitting president of the United States. Trump has come out, as you're well aware, and said that he will wait until the shutdown is over. Mm-hmm. And I find that, I don't think it's so much capitulation, but he's moving towards the center. He's trying to throw her a bone. But, you know, she cannot prevent him from going into the chamber to speak. She can, however, keep the TV cameras out, turn the lights off, the air conditioning up as high as it'll possibly go, and just create all these hurdles for him. So there's been a lot of debate, and it happened on my program this morning, of do we want to support him for waiting until the shutdown's over, or do we want to have him do it from the Oval Office, the border, the Senate chamber, or whatever the case may be. But she is the one that's going to come out with egg on her face on this one.
And I wonder if he'll ever let her fly again.
Right. But she'll have to go coach.
Yeah, exactly. And then shoving her luggage back into the hallway there. Michael Hart of the Michael Hart Show. Our time is too short, but I want you to find him. Give us your website, Michael.
It's Hart, H-A-R-T, heartofamerica.net.
And Unknown America, find on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, all booksellers, and his website. He gives part of it back to military charities. Michael, we'll see you again soon, okay?
Thanks, Amy.
Great. and this is America Trends on the U2 America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. Glad to have all of you here with us. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. Hope you will join us online, U2America.com, to find out more about everything we're doing and to connect with us. You can click through there, the portals, and find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the usual suspects. And we would love to befriend you, so won't you please? Thank you to our guest tonight, Bill Goldstein, our resident observationalist. You can find some more of his musings at BillGoldstein.com, and do click through to his social media. He has got great videos that will make you smile. And we also had Molly Fletcher, a model and violinist who can actually do it all at the same time. She's really got it going on, got a great new album coming out later this year, and we were just sort of razzle-dazzled by her and the group that she just finished playing with in Asia. So really cool to have her in here. Michael Hart of Heart of America talking about some of the political headlines of the day. Don't forget to get his book, Unknown America, and check him out at Heart of America's show. That's his show. Finally tonight, Neil Diamond, just a U.S. treasure, turning 78 years old, and we are going to throw back to some Sweet Caroline, back to the 70s. We're going to take you with the graphics and cool fades and all of you for our TV audience. Sweet Caroline, as we say goodbye to you from America Trends. Until next time.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring out of strings? Spring became the summer. Would have believed you'd come along. Hands, touching hands, reaching out, dear Lord, touching me, touching you, sweet Caroline, your time never seems so good. And it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, it runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Warm, touching warm.